So, we are here again. Let me just first say, Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. I hope I'm not incoherent today. We had a very big Rath Yatra here in Philadelphia yesterday, and I'm a little sun-baked and maybe even demented in the head. So, we are today starting with text 32. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So here in the third chapter of the 11th canto, we're concluding the teachings of Prabuddha, the Yogendra, who is answering the question, I guess, on behalf of everybody. You notice here, it's interesting that he addresses his questions to you, plural, and then each answers in turn. So I assume they're pretty much of one mind on these things. So he's asked about how even a foolish person, Stuladi, can cross over the uncrossable ocean of Maya easily. And so the answer has been about the practice of Bhakti Yoga, which has been described. And now, these last two verses have, Bhakti Yoga is divided into two parts, sadhana bhakti and sadhya bhakti, devotional service in practice and devotional service in perfection. So the previous verse really is the transition with these words, bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, that's text 31, that by bhakti, bhakti is awakened, that is to say, by sadhana bhakti, sadhya bhakti, or bhava bhakti is awakened. And so there it's mentioned the appearance of hair standing on the bodies, the asapaptika vikaras. And so now here, other symptoms in text 32 is a further characterization of bhava bhakti. Klachit, sometimes, rudanti, they cry, achutta tintaya, by thinking about achutta. Just think about him and they start crying. Klachit dasanti, they laugh. Nandanti, they take great pleasure. Vadanti, they speak. Alaukika, these are in the word for word, alaukika is act amazingly. This comes from the word loka, meaning the way of the world. So alaukika is in a unworldly way, or a very unusual way, not common. Lokika means, you know, the common way of things, the normal procedures, and they're out of the norm. Deviance of the upper end of the bell curve there, you know, there. Somebody acts like that. Either they're saints, either they're at the top end of the bell curve. You know the bell curve? The bell curve is a standard thing with, you know, the majority in the middle, and then it slopes off to the minority extremes at either end. So the upper end of the bell curve in behavior is this bhava bhakti, the symptoms of transcendent people. And the lower end are people that are stark raving mad. And sometimes people have trouble telling them apart. Sometimes at school, a kid that's really, really brilliant gets listed as mentally defective. They can't tell the difference. So here they're like they act like madmen. So this is alaukika. They act amazingly. Nrityanti, they dance. Gayanti, they sing. Anushilyanti, ajam, they imitate the unborn Supreme Lord. Then sometimes, bhavanti tushnim, they become silent. It says here, param etya nivritta, they become, having achieved the vision, or having obtained the audience, it says here, sometimes achieving its personal audience, they remain peaceful and silent. So this is their behavior, is described here. This verse is also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, describing bhava bhakti. So here then in the purport, it says here, even the text, having achieved love of Godhead, devotees sometimes cry out loud, absorbed in the thought of the infallible Lord. Sometimes they laugh, feel great pleasure, speak out loud to the Lord. This Vedanta is speaking, means they're talking to him, having discourse with the empty air, it seems, like crazy people. Dance or sing, such devotees having transcendental having transcended material conditional life, that's this alaukika. Sometimes imitate the unborn supreme by acting out his pastimes. This anushilyanti, imitate. And sometimes achieving his personal audience, they remain peaceful and silent. In the purport, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is quoted in giving some of these different symptoms. So in the first paragraph, it's explained as rudanti. The devotees cry, thinking, another day has passed, and I still could not obtain Krishna. Then what will I do? Where will I go? From whom shall I inquire? And who can possibly help me reach Krishna? That's an example of why a devotee will cry out of strong feelings of separation. You can also cry for happiness too, but this is the other one. Hasanti, that's laughter. They laugh. It is late at night, the sky is dark, and Krishna is determined to steal from the house of one of the elderly gopis. He's hiding underneath a tree in the corner of the courtyard belonging to one of the cowherd men. Although Krishna thinks that he is completely concealed, he suddenly hears a voice from one of the elderly members of the family. Who are you there? Who are you? I say. Thus Krishna has been caught, and he begins to flee the courtyard. When this humorous scene is revealed to the devotee begins to laugh heartily. So here he's describing somebody seeing it. Prabhupada is described in the heart of a very advanced devotee the pastimes of the Lord as they are currently going on in Goloka Vrindavan, broadcast into the devotee's heart as if by a kind of spiritual television. So the devotee actually sees these pastimes. And so he's will burst into laughter on the subway or wherever he may be. Nandanti, they take great pleasure. When Krishna actually reveals his transcendental form to the devotee experiences the highest transcendental bliss. Vedanti, when they speak, the devotee says to the Lord, O Krishna, after so many days, I have finally achieved you. So these kinds of reactions that are the spontaneous reactions of very strong feelings with with respect to the Lord. And so in the next paragraph, the word alaukika is described, the transcendental. The devotee has successfully transcended the material conditions of life, not of this world. The transcendental platform, and in quotes, Sagunan Samiti Chaitan Brahmubhuyaya Kalpate, by Bhakti Yoga, by steady Bhakti Yoga, one comes to this transcendent platform, Brahma Buddha, and that means Sagunan Samiti Chaitan has gone beyond the three modes of nature. So a very precise understanding of what this means to be transcendental, not under the control of the three modes of material nature, directly under the control of the Lord's eternal internal potency. Again, next paragraph, this anushilianti, out of extreme ecstasy, the devotee sometimes imitates or acts out the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The Sridhar Swami mentions it, and that's, we see this in the gopis in Vrindavan when Krishna was absent before the Rasa dance. In their kind of ecstasy, they began to act out his platform. They began to act out his pastimes. In the fourth paragraph, it mentions here that this is the highest perfection, beginning with this. Asked how you can achieve this, Tasmad Gurum Prapajeta Jijnasa Shreya Uttamam, you're interested in the Shreya. So now the Shreya is being described here by this Bhava Bhakti. So that's really the end of the description now, and the next text, 33, is a summary. Iti Bhagavatam Dharmam Shikshan Bhaktya Tarutaya. Thus, iti, in this way that we have now been seeing. If you go back, if you have the book in front of you, it's page 224. It's text 322. Tatra Bhagavatam Dharmam Shikshit. So you see, when he concludes, it's sort of almost quotes this, Shikshit, he should learn, Shikshan is the word here, thus by learning, thus learning Bhagavatam Dharma, Bhakti Tarutaya, and by practicing the devotional service, which is follows from that learning. So these two things, there's jnana and vijnana, knowledge and application of that knowledge, are here. So those things. Narayana paro mayam anjas taranti dustaram. So by this bhakti and unto the by being a Narayana Parayana. Narayana Paraya means one who is completely devoted to Narayan. That person who is Narayana Paraha is completely devoted to Narayan. Mayam Anjan Taranti Dustaram. Again, that's a quotation. That person easily crosses Maya, which is Dustaram, impossible to cross. So that just summarizes the teachings here. In the purport, it's a discussion of how this crossing over the illusory energy, that is to say, liberation, is actually a byproduct. I mean, what's been described in the last two verses is really beyond liberation. It's it's love for Krishna, ecstatic love for the Lord. So this is the a byproduct. This is interesting here because the nine yogendras are mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita as examples of devotees who are situated in Shantarasa. And some authorities don't even think of Shanta as one of the rasas, because there's no active service. It's this kind of passive adoration of the Lord, and it's just kind of one step above the position of a Brahmavadi. But it's personal. And so you can see this in them, that the question is really about liberation, and like a Brahmavadi, they talk about easy liberation, but actually what they describe is love of God, because that's actually their platform as those who are in Shantarasa. And you can see in Shantarasa that there is also symptoms of ecstasy, because I wonder where I put that. In the Bhagavatam, it says that in Shantarasa, one advances up to the point of prema, or has an understanding of prema. And so here you can see this, though interestingly, the things that are being described here, like in text 32 and in 31 and 32, are actually quoted as in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as symptoms, quoted to illustrate the stage of bhava, which is before the stage of prema. That concludes this portion of here of this chapter, where this first question by King Nimi is answered. And so if we go to text 34, we see Sri Raja Vacha. So Nimi asks another question here. What is well? Here we say, Narayana Abhidanasya Brahmana Paramatmanaha Nishtam Harata No Vaktum Yuyam Hi Brahmavittamaha. He says to them, he addresses them as Brahmavittamaha. It's in the plural. You are the best of the knowers of Brahman, of the Supreme, Brahmavittama. You can explain this, Yuyam, all of you, it says in the word for word, all this, because kindly explain Arhata to us. What is the nishtam, which is translated here as the transcendental situation of the Lord. But the Lord is described as here as Narayana Abhibid, Narayana Abhidanasya Brahmanaha Paramatmanaha Nishtam. The transcendental situation of Abhidhana means something so named. In other words, of that which goes by the name of Narayana. The Abhidhana really applies to all three words. Please explain the situation of that one thing which is known variously as Narayana, as Brahman, as Paramatman. So these three things they're asking about. Of Narayana, the way it's translated here, the transcendental situation of the Supreme Lord Narayana, who is himself the absolute truth, Brahmanaha, and the super soul of everyone, Paramatmanaha. But these three are all modifying Nishtam, the situation of, and then there's this list, Narayana, Brahmana, Paramatmana, with this interesting Abhidhana, with the denoted as Narayana, Brahmana, and Paramatmanaha. So you can explain this to me, he says, because you are the knowers, Brahmavittama. In the purport of this text, it starts with a quote from citing Sridhar Swami. That if you look at the, he points out in the last verse, Narayana Paramayam Ajnastaranti Dustaram. That's the conclusion of the last verse. Mentions Narayana, being devoted to Narayana. So therefore, that's the first word here, Narayana. So it gives emphasis to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the king refers to all three, Narayana, Brahma, Paramatma. And here it says that he wants to clarify that the highest transcendental truth is Narayana. And here is quoted Bhagavatam 1.2.11, this Vedanti Tattvavidas, those who are Tattvavit. Just like they're called Brahmavid, so Tattva, those who know the truth, the Tattvam, that ultimate transcendent principle of Tattva, which is Jnanam Advayam, non-dual knowledge. They say, those Tattvavidas, those who are the knowers of this Tattva, they know it as, when it says Brahmeti, that's Brahma Iti, Paramatma Iti, Bhagavan Iti. And so the Iti is like quotation marks. They know it as Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan, Shabyate, it's spoken, they speak of it in these three ways. So that, therefore, when he says Narayana, if you look at this verse with the same three features are mentioned, that this Narayana is referring to the Bhagavan feature. So they just use the personal name Narayana, which is usually discussed as explained as meaning the resting place of all beings. He was the resting place of all beings. And so then there's a citation of those mentioned that people become attracted to the impersonal Brahman, the mystic yogis, to the Paramatma. That's what the text talks about. There's three different approaches. By the Snana Yoga, you understand Brahma. By Ashtanga Yoga, the Paramatma, and then by Bhakti Yoga, mature transcendental knowledge, surrender directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, who is eternally situated in his own abode called Vaikuntha Dham. In other words, it's the same Supreme Lord, but is encountered in different ways. Paramatma is that Lord insofar as the Paramatma is dealing with or in relationship to the material energy and the souls in the material energy. Paramatma actually refers to, in this purport, Shirodakshayi Vishnu is mentioned, but Paramatma really has three features. Mahavishnu, or Karanaranavashayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Shirodakshayi Vishnu. So Mahavishnu, lying on the causal ocean Vishnu, Karanaranavashayi Vishnu, Karanadakshayi Vishnu, is the supersoul of all the universes. Garbhodakshayi Vishnu is the supersoul of one universe. And Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, the Vishnu lying on the ocean of milk, is the supersoul of the individual souls in the universe. They are really the three supersoul features of the Lord. They're avatars. Why are they called avatars? Because they are within the material energy, one merely being in the Mahatattva cloud or ocean, and the others, one within the shell of the universe, but the other two being within the universe. So that's the super soul feature. Then the final interesting thing in this purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also says the word nishta can also be translated as firm faith. When they're asking that nishta, the word nishta in a general sense means state, condition, or position. So, of course, in when you're talking about transcendence, transcendental situation, that's why it's translated that way. But nishta, when it means state, condition, or position, also comes to mean the unchanging or fixed state or condition, and therefore it refers to a kind of a fixed state of a devotee, so that's nishta, firm faith. That's where he's planted, and you can't uproot him. That's firm faith. So, in this sense, Nimi Maharaj's inquire about the process of developing perfect faith in the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan Nishta, and that will also be alluded to in the answer that's coming up. So, with text 35, we now have this answer being answered, the question being answered by Pipalayana, name of another one of the Yogendras. Pipala. A pipala is the name of a tree, a peepal tree. A note in Latin known as the ficus religiosa. I think it's the tree that Buddha was supposed to have sat under when he achieved enlightenment, the religious fig tree. Pipalayana means, one who is stays under a peepal tree. Somehow he has that name, Pipalayana. So he answers this question. With a long meter. If you want to chant this, you have to use the Govindamari Purusham melodies. Titi Udbhava Pralaya Hetu Ahetu Rasya Yat Swapna Jagara Sushuptishu Sadbahischa Dehindriya Suridayani Charanti Yena Sanjivitani Tadaveha Param Narendra. So he says. So in this verse, he's as it pointed out in the purport, Pipalaya explains the three features of the Absolute Truth in the same order in which the king mentions them. So the first line, Stiti Udbhava Pralaya Hetu, the cause of the stiti, the maintenance, pralaya, the destruction, udbhava, stiti, creation, I'm sorry, stiti is creation, udbhava, maintenance, pralaya, destruction, hetu of the universe, a hetu. There's more to be explained by this, but he is the cause, and you could say ahetu means he has no cause. As we'll see, there's more complicated meanings to hetu. There's three different ways of understanding this word ahetu. So, of whom, right? That one of we want to know about that one of this who is of this material universe, the cause, the hetu. Stiti Udbhava Pralaya, creation, maintenance, and destruction, although ahetu, not caused by anything else. So that's the Bhagavan feature. Because if you're dealing with impersonal Brahman, you don't see the energies. So impersonal Brahman is now described in the next line, yat swapna jagara susuptishu sadbahischa, here you see is the, in the translation, pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, unconscious deep sleep, and also exists beyond them. That's the translation of this line, huh? That which swapna is dreaming, sleep in which you dream, jagara, the state of being awake, susupti is deep dreamless sleep. Sat, he exists during all these three phases. That's what's there. So he is there in these three phases, and bahischa, and also external to them as well. He pervades the various states of wakefulness, dreaming, and unconscious deep sleep, and exists beyond them. And then C, dihindriyasu hridayanti. Charanti yena sanjivitani. That's the whole sentence there, the whole phrase there. This is the Paramatma feature. Charanti. Charanti means he goes or they act. Excuse me. By which these things act. The deha, the material body, the indriya, the senses, asu, the life air, hridayanti, here the minds, they go. Charanti means to go, or wander, or graze, if you're talking about cows. But here these senses, these elements, they're active, are made by active, by which sanjivitani, they're enlivened. So that refers to the super soul. He enlivens the body, senses, life, air, and mental activities, and thus enables all the subtle and gross organs of the body to begin their functions, that charanti, they go. My dear king, know that personality of Godhead to be the supreme. Please know, param, O King Narendra. So this is their, this is his beginning of his answer to the question, Narayana, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So he mentions all three. He mentions Bhagavan, Brahman, and Paramatma. Now there's some complication. This is a very short chapter. The answer goes from 35 to 40. So it's just a few verses. Uh, um, And as you can see, it's very long because it's very long purports. Because basically, this is Vedanta philosophy in here. It's just very, very philosophical. I'm having some consultations on this. this verse too. These verses also. I'll tell you why next week. So here in the purport, after saying that they're mentioned in order, then Stiti Udbhava Pralaya Hetu refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who expands himself as the triple Purusha incarnation. So strictly speaking, this Stiti Udbhava Pralaya, creation, maintenance, and destruction, are really carried out by the expansions of the Lord. And then after quoting a Bhagavatam verse in support, it says, thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, is mentioned here as Hetuhu, or the supreme cause of creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the cosmic situation. Still, there is no cause of the Lord himself. He is Ahetu. Then the Brahma Samhita is quoted as Anadir Adir Govinda. He is without an origin, but is the origin of all else. And then a second meaning is the word Ahetu has been explained by Jiva Goswami to indicate that the Supreme Lord has his original form as Krishna in his own transcendental abode called Krishna Loka. In that sense, he is not the cause. In other words, Krishna doesn't do anything himself. Krishna himself in his transcendental abode is aloof from the material world. That's the meaning of Bhagavan. So he is the one who is uncaused, who is not the cause of anything, but somehow manages to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Why? By these expansions. So that's an interesting way of explaining this simultaneously, Hetu and Ahetu. So that's why he is indicating this feature of Bhagavan. Eka amshena stito dagat, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, right? With a little, one piece of myself, I maintain this whole creation. So if that's the case, what is he doing otherwise? If he can take care of it with a little piece of himself, what's he doing? Well, we know what he's doing. Otherwise, you're baffled as to why God isn't bored to death. Because it's not hard for him to do. He's all powerful. So everything is done by his expansions and by his multipotencies. And here, a little later on in this first paragraph, Natasya karyam karanam navijyate. The absolute truth really has nothing to do since everything is done by his potencies. So this paragraph ends, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has pointed out that even though the Supreme Lord Krishna is ahetuhu, or causeless, and two, that's one, and two, aloof from the cause of the material creation, the Lord is also described in this verse as hetu, or the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material manifestation, because he expands himself as Paramatma, the Supersoul, who acts as the prime mover of the cosmic manifestation. Especially if we understand the Supersoul is all three Purusha avatars, are forms of the Supersoul. So that seems to be as far as we can get today. So next week we'll start with the second paragraph of this purport, where the next sense of Ahetu, the third meaning of Ahetu, is explained, which is very interesting to me, extremely interesting point. I'm sorry I couldn't get it to it today, but we'll have plenty of time to discuss that. So let me now switch over to the Q&A mode, and we have a little time for questions and answers and so on. Let's see.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
So now, if you want to unmute yourself.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Hare Krishna.
This is Vrijamani Das with Atlanta Business.
Hare Krishna,
Prabhupada. I had a question, and also if you wouldn't mind, a couple, two small editorial points about the edition that we have here.
Okay.
The first is that this comment at the end of 11.3.34, at the very end, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he doesn't actually say that. I think they took the word Bhagavan Nishtha and sort of read more into it than was actually there. I mean, it's a sort of interesting idea about the faith, but that's not actually what Bhaktisiddhanta says. And the other thing, which I think you started to say correctly and then changed yourself according to the word for word, sthiti is maintenance and udbhava is creation.
Thank you very much, because I got caught up short because, yes, sthiti means maintenance and udbhava seems to mean coming into being, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right, and then when I looked at the word for word, right, that's what happened. Okay, thank you. I really feel happy about that because as soon as this was over, I was going to go back to the dictionary and look that up, but I didn't want to confuse our hearers or destroy their, you know. Anyway, okay, so there's an error there, right?
So my question:
creation and sthiti is maintenance.
So my question:
Pralaya sadhana shakti. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So my question was, in a way, where, and I mean, maybe this is something that's hard to get into the preciseness of, but where exactly the line gets drawn between Bhagavan and Paramatma? I mean, when we think of Paramatma sort of in functional terms. And yet we can identify Paramatma in personal terms as the three different Purushavatars.
Yeah.
And generally, Narayana is a name that is more connected with those Purushavataras than it is with, you know, Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And unless you take Jiva Goswami's reading of Ahetu as meaning that, well, he's actually not the cause, he's off having fun, And you think about the actual, instead of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, it was Brahman, Paramatma, and Narayana. So to what extent is Narayana Paramatma, and to what extent is he Bhagavan? And sort of, you know, I've heard you talk about the difference between Bhagavan and Paramatma as Krishna with his external energy versus Krishna with his internal energy. So to what degree does Narayana fit into either of those two categories?
That's an interesting question. Of course, Narayana is also in the spiritual world, where he's with Lakshmi Narayana, in Vaikuntha. He's the Lord of Vaikuntha. So if the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when one goes to Vaikuntha, Narayana is there with Lakshmi, and he's situated in his internal potencies. He's surrounded by his potencies, some of which are material potencies, but he's enjoying in his own kingdom. But especially the first two Purusha avatars, and Lakshmi is his spiritual energy, his internal potency. So he consorts with Lakshmi. When he consorts, he does not consort with Durga. He doesn't consort with the material energy. But when he does, then he takes on the aspect of Lord Shiva. So when he glances at Maya Devi, it's from a distance. And then his kind of concretized glance becomes Shambhu, according to the Brahma Samhita. So in that sense, when he's in intimate relationship with the external energy, he now has this that takes on this aspect of Lord Shiva and is not really available for the purpose of transcendence. He takes on the for Vaishnavas anyway. He becomes, although he's not Vishnu, although he's not Jivatattva, he nevertheless takes on the aspects of a deva, a demigod. And because he's not really the same as Vishnu Tattva, we give him, but he's not a Jiva, we give him this you know, Shiva Tattva designation. However, you notice that with the first two Purusha avatars, actually all three, as a matter of fact, all three, when they're in their, you know, with Ananda Shesha and so on, they have Lakshmi as there. So they're Lakshmi, and so they have that although they're within the material world, by having Lakshmi with them, they still remain sort of within or consorted with the internal potency. When Super Soul is seen in the heart by the yogis, he's by himself. They apparently just see him as four-handed form of Janardana, according to the arrangement of symbols in his hands, standing on the lotus of the heart. There he's by himself, like a bachelor. But when he is in the milk ocean or floating on the Garbha ocean or in the Karna ocean, Lakshmi is with him. And so that sort of seems to have a borderline situation there. But the idea of Bhagavan as such, strictly speaking, the same person may be seen as Paramatman, as Bhagavan, really seems to be concerned with what they are dealing with, and their avatars, and they're dealing with the material energy, the creation of the world, the maintenance of the world, overseeing the destruction of the world. They oversee these things, upadrasta, at least involving the whole cosmic manifestation, anumanta, dealing specifically with the jivas who are in there. And so that seems to me to be the distinction. But because of the presence of Lakshmi with them, even when they're in the material world, of course, I mean, when the Lord does come to the material world, even when he's in the material world as an avatar, his potencies are there frequently. Krishna is there with Radharani, Ramachandra is there with Sita. But in a sense, they kind of bring the spiritual world with them. That's why it said with Krishna, when he descends to the material world, he's never really here, but he brings the internal potency with him. And so what really goes on in Vrindavan, although it's exhibited in the material world, is really not part of the internal potency. In one sense, they're shown here, but they're not really here in the same way. They stay there. What do you think?
Yeah. Would it make sense? Because Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan are, as we would say, different aspects of the same person. But then, you know, Narayana and Krishna are, you know, different aspects of the same person. So it seems that to be able to think of Narayana in one context as Paramatman and another context as Bhagavan is kind of like saying it's different aspects of the same aspect of the same person.
Yeah. That's okay.
Okay.
I think that's all right.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. Oh, I'm so happy about that, Stacey. I thought I'd... crazy. I just didn't notice when I was studying that the sthiti was mixed up. Anything else? Other questions or comments?
From Gurudev?
Yeah.
Gurudev, it's Mahamuni. Please accept my humble obeisances. I have a question, and I have three editorial comments. No, the last part was a joke, I'm sorry. Although I did have one last week. My question is, it seems that in Upanishadic literature, these three stages of consciousness, waking, sleeping, and dreamless sleep, are considered really important categories.
Right.
And I was wondering if you can help shed light on why these are such important categories that when we get into these verses, and as you mentioned, there's so few of these verses, and it's considered really important to mention that Krishna, that Bhagavan is available in all three phases and even beyond them.
This is one of those things I have, on that list of things to look up sometimes and check out and try to study and get some more answers. It says here this particularly deals with when you're talking about Brahman. And so in the Upanishads, Brahman is consciousness. And from the point of view of Brahman realization, it's not really important from that perspective to make a distinction between the supreme Brahman and the subordinate Brahman. Because Brahman realization is kind of abstract. And so you're just considered with Brahman as such. And so that distinction is not so important. So you're just dealing with Brahman. Because when you're talking about Brahman, we are Brahman, right? I mean, this idea is strong in this part of this chapter. That we are also Brahman. So we participate in, we have the same nature as Brahman. So if you're just looking, just abstracting with regard to quality, that Brahman is there. So we have some experience of Brahman, that is to say consciousness. But we see that our consciousness varies and changes. Brahman is unchanging. So there's that kind of consciousness that's there in dreaming sleep. There's waking consciousness. And susuptisu, it seems like unconsciousness, but we can wake up again, and although we can't remember the state of unconsciousness, the fact that we feel good afterwards, we can say, I had a deep sleep, I had good sleep, means that it was there somehow or other, even though we have no memory of it. So there's this variousness. So it's my understanding so far is there must be this turiya, the single consciousness that pervades all three. And that people who are very highly realized souls are also situated in that fourth consciousness. So they are equally conscious whether they're dreaming, sleep, waking, or deep conscious sleep, they can apparently are the same all there. That seems to me to be that there's a kind of, remember, exploration of consciousness carried on by people who are, first of all, supremely adept at detachment and withdrawal of senses from the objects, and simultaneously supremely adept at the concentration of attention, so that consciousness becomes heightened by concentration. It seems to them that they have not only posited this theoretically, this fourth state, but actually experienced this fourth state.
Okay, well, thank you, Gurumaraj. I guess
that really cleared it up for you, huh?
I think you just kind of. My question was about why it's considered important, and I feel like you made the point that, and if it's too windy here, I apologize. I'm just outside with my daughters. I can
not
try
only
to come.
Windy, it's baby.
Yeah, I know. Well, welcome to my life. I think one thing you mentioned is that, I mean, it's important because it's important to recognize that our state as Brahman is always with us. And I guess it's the kind of thing that, as you mentioned, sages can actually be aware of. And so that makes a lot of sense that,
yeah.
You know, the ground level realization of God is our, you know, enduring identity in the right way with Him.
Right.
So thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we go through these states, but the soul endures through all of them, just like changing bodies, the same consciousness is there. And so transcendental consciousness means that you have the sense of your own, strong sense of your own identity that is not affected by these changing states, including these three states, and including the changes from childhood to youth to old age, including changing bodies at the time of death. You maintain your identity. It's not destroyed, created in the end. These bodies.
Well, thanks, Gurmash.
Okay.
I'm going to mute my phone again because it's too crazy here, but thank you.
I know. Anyone else? Okay. In that case, we'll leave off now and we'll continue. I got a cue. Does Russ again have a question? You had one last week and you didn't finish up. I may not be here. Okay. All right. So we'll continue next week. Remember now we're in text 35 and we've already gone through the first paragraph of the purport. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Aki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Aki Jai.